Okay, good tvach. Tonight is the International Conference of Chabad Emissaries in New York, and I wanted to share a few stories that highlight the challenge and the romance of being an emissary of the Rebbe. I use the word romance. I'm not sure if that's the word that people usually use, but it's something we see also in this week's Torah portion in the mission of Eliezer, how Eliezer takes initiative and the pure faith in his master Avraham to go find a wife for Yitzchak without any doubt in the success of his mission. So on that note, I want to share with you first story for tonight. But the Tanya that was printed in Beirut in 1982. The Rebbe said that in every place that there are Jews, a Tanya should be printed and Tanya should be studied. And it's a spiritual segula, it's a spiritual blessing for a Tanya to be printed in a city. So when Israel entered Lebanon in 1982, the Rebbe instructed that they should print a Tanya in Beirut. So the issue was, though, that try as they might, they couldn't get permission from the Israeli government, from the army, to allow civilians to go and to bring a printing press and to drive there and to go, and they didn't get permission. So Chassidim asked again and again, and they were rebuffed, and on the surface, rightfully so. Because how is the government supposed to, how is the army supposed to understand the value of a Tanya being printed? But there was one chassid who I had the privilege of learning from him and spending some time with him, Rabbi Aaron Laser Zeitlin, Olav Shalom, who he was trying to fall asleep one night, and he said to himself, "It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that the Rebbe is asking us to do something that's not being successful. It can't be. If the Rebbe is asking us to do this, there must be a way for this to be done." So he gets up and he looks at the clock. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. And he drives to the Northern Command that was in charge of this operation that entered Beirut. He jumps out of his car by the gate. And he says, "I have secret information that's going to help our soldiers in Beirut. I need to speak right away to the commander." And they let him go right to the commander. 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, he left his home. I don't know what time he arrived there. And he speaks to the commander, and he starts telling him a little bit about the Rebbe. He starts telling him about the Rebbe's prophetic words and the miracles that were caused by the Rebbe's blessings. And he tells him that the Rebbe says that it will be beneficial for the soldiers and for the Jewish people to have a Tanya printed in Beirut. He wants permission to go there. And if you like, you could ask me after the Zoom, after the story. I have the copy of the government permission to Rabbi Zeitlin to go enter Beirut. So he comes into Beirut with... He's a civilian with another chassid, another fellow Chabad man, and they go together into Beirut with his printing press. You can imagine what the soldiers who are looking at, who are in charge of the emissions, in charge of that of the security in that area. Imagine they see these guys arrive at 3 o'clock in the morning. Civilians, what are they doing here? They came, but they see it's an official. They have official permission to be there, and they let them in. And they got to work, and they printed the Tanya. It took about 3 hours. They printed the Tanya, and then they danced with the soldiers, and they said L'chaim with them. They celebrated the Tanya, Baruch Hashem, and the mission was successful. So this initiative that Rabbi Zeitlin had to go middle of the night, it came from a place within his soul of absolute faith. Like, if the Rebbe said this needs to be done, there's going to be a way. This has to get done. It's going to work. Similar story I heard this weekend about Rebbetzin Groner. Rabbi Groner was a Rebbe's secretary, and his wife was understandably was very challenged by his position as Rebbe's secretary, because he was on call 24/7 at the Rebbe's service. Anyways, it was one Friday. Actually, I think it was a Thursday, if I remember correctly. Either way, the Rebbe said to Rabbi Groner, "Do you plan to stay here?" And he's like, he thinks the Rebbe needs him. He says, "Yes." The Rebbe says, "There's no reason for you to stay here. According to Jewish law, there's no reason that you should feel obligated to be here. And there's nothing that would be difficult for you if you go to the country, except for that week was the 9th of Av, and the 9th of Av, traditionally we say the prayers called Kinos for the coming of Mashiach, asking Hashem to end the exile. The only thing that may be difficult, everybody's asking him, do you think it'll be harder for you to say the Kinos over there in the country? There's no reason you need to stay here in Crown Heights in Brooklyn. There's nothing holding you back from going to the country." So you saw the Rebbe is clearly telling him he's got to go to the country. So he goes to the country. His wife's birthday is that weekend. And she was actually very concerned about being there lonely by herself with her children. And his arrival, sudden arrival to the country, for her was like cold water on her parched, dry soul. Very, very, it was revived her. And she felt that it was with divine inspiration that the Rebbe knew her pain and her plight, and without her asking the Rebbe specifically to have let her husband come home, she felt the Rebbe knew with divine inspiration about her situation, and that's why he sent her husband to her that weekend. So she wrote a letter to the Rebbe, thanking the Rebbe and acknowledging the Rebbe's divine inspiration. And she said, "I prayed very hard, and with trust and with happiness, and this is And I appreciate your divine inspiration in letting my husband come." So I don't know exactly the words that were said, but the theme was, it wasn't the divine inspiration that was the point of the story. It was your faith and your happiness and your trust. And as you underlined the words, that you prayed very hard. You prayed very hard with faith and with joy and with trust. And that's what opened the door. And that's what brought the blood. That's what brought the blessing that you ask of Hashem to be fulfilled, to be able to spend that Shabbos with your husband, your birthday. It was a result of your heartfelt prayer with faith and with trust. So it was highlighting that that's something we need to learn ourselves, that just we learn the story of Eliezer. Eliezer prayed to Hashem for the success of his mission with absolute trust in Hashem that his mission would be successful, and it was. The Rebbe actually once remarked that this activity of Chabad emissaries around the world, people have gotten used to it. The Rebbe said this in 1955. People have gotten used to it. So the kind of devotion people used to have for this initiative isn't the same because it's gotten older. But instead, the Rebbe said, you have to picture as if the Rebbe himself called you into his room and said to you, "Go to this city, I'm giving you the city, take responsibility and help these people in the city." And if you have that kind of a picture of where you are and what you need to do, then the challenges are benign. The challenges aren't what seemed before as impossible is moved aside. And this brings us to our featured story tonight. L'chaim, l'chaim. In 1915, World War I began, and the Rebbe Rasham had to leave the city of Lubavitch together with his family, and they moved to the other side of Russia, and together with him also came a prominent student, a rabbi named Rabbi Yaakov Landau. Rabbi Yaakov Landau, he originally was his father was a rabbi in a city called Kornitz. His father was a rabbi in that city. When his father passed away, they wanted him to take over his position. He didn't feel at the age of 20 years old that he should take over that position, but he did. But after the war started and he had to leave that city, so he came with the Rebbe Rashab to the city of Rostov. And in Rostov, he was a rabbi for the Rebbe's household and then for the chassidim there, and he began doing, being creating a mikveh, Jewish schools. He actually founded kosher slaughter while he was there in Rostov. But after the Rebbe Rashab's passing in the year Tafresh Pei in 1930, so the government forced all the Hasidim to leave Rostov, and he ended up in Moscow. And in Moscow, he had a very hard time finding a profession that he could support himself with, because the communists had taken over. So there was no one who was allowed to own any of their own businesses. Everything belonged to the communist government. So he was forced to take a job as a bookkeeper for a store. And the book, as most stores, the bookkeepers were forced to keep two kinds of bookkeeping. They had to have one kind of bookkeeping, which was the real numbers, and the other one, which they presented to the government, just in order for them to survive. The government wasn't the government didn't allow their conditions to that anyone could possibly support themselves. So therefore, it was common for there to be a black market. And things not to be on the books. But unfortunately, he was caught. A KGB officer came to the store, and they confiscated the actual numbers, the real numbers, and they arrested him. So he was very distraught, and he consulted lawyers, and the lawyer said, in the best case scenario, you will be given a fine. Now, getting a fine is not fun, but if you get a fine, you pay the fine and you move on. But in this scenario, getting a fine would be very, very detrimental to the welfare of the Landau family, because once, if he would get that fine, that would be a black stain on his record. And then if he would try to apply to leave Russia, so then he would be refused. So it was very important to him that he was vindicated, but there was very strong evidence that he was guilty, as he was. So he knew what to do. And that time, the Hasidim had a raffle that everyone participated in, a raffle to travel to the resting place of the Rebbe Rashab in Rostov. And the winner of the raffle was a yeshiva student of Teferes Bachurim. Teferes Bachurim, today, that's the name of the Chabad Baal Tshuva Yeshiva in Marston, New Jersey. But Teferes Bachurim was also the name of a afternoon, evening program for adults who are working. Chabad made a program in Soviet Russia for them to come after work and to study Torah after hours with others together to study Torah, to strengthen themselves. So one of the boys in Teferes Bachurim, he won the raffle, but he knew the plight of Rabbi Landau. So he said to Rabbi Landau, listen, Rabbi Landau, I know I won the raffle, but you need this more than I do. Here, you take the ticket. Rabbi Landau saw this guy was very sincere and he meant it. So he took the ticket and he traveled to the resting place of the Rebbe Rashab to be there on the anniversary of his passing, the 2nd of Nisan. He arrives there and he pours his heart out, asking the Rebbe for a blessing that he should be successful in court. He comes back, and the court date was set for Friday night. He didn't have a choice. He had to show up to court, even though it was Shabbos, but he had to be there. And so he comes to court, and the lawyer on behalf of the government stands up. The lawyer shows the records of the store. And it's very clear that there is some things that have not been reported to the government. And the lawyer says that the full extent of the law he's prosecuting, that that the Rabbi Abel Landau should be held responsible for his crime. He's causing the government to lose so much money because of his dishonesty with the government. So the judge screams out, says, "You're speaking nonsense." And this was a total shock, because why was he just reporting what the evidence was. Anyways, the court was adjourned for recess, and the judges discussed the case for 2 hours. And during these 2 hours, you can imagine Rabbi Landau's trepidation. And the other, even the plaintiff's lawyer was also, the government lawyer was also in great trepidation, because it was so uncharacteristic for a government, for the judge to speak so brazenly to the government lawyer. And, but that's what he said. He said, "You're speaking idiocy." So anyways, the court returns into session, and the judge announces that all the charges are dismissed, and Rabbi Landau is free to go, and he is not guilty at all. All of the Gentiles in the courtroom were shocked, because this never happens. I mean, there was clear evidence. So all of them came over to Rabbi Landau and said, "You're innocent, you're innocent." They were like all like celebrating, it's amazing. And Baruch Hashem, he actually did move to Israel, and he served as a rabbi in Bnei Brak for 50 years until his passing in 1986. One more story is this, on this theme of trusting in Hashem and how that brings all of God's blessings. I believe it was at the celebration of the Rebbe's circumcision. The Rebbe's grandfather, Meir Shlomo Yanofsky, was the rabbi of Nikolaev, and there was a chassid there, an usher of Nikolaev, and he wasn't eating from the festivities. Apparently, he wasn't eating because he was so careful in the laws of kosher that he didn't want to rely on the kashrus of that at the bris, even though it was the highest level of kashrus, but he was uber, even higher level. But it was a little bit of an affront to the rabbi. The rabbi said, "Really, this deserves to be criticized. But I can't criticize you because you saved my life." What was the story? How did he save his life? When he got typhus, that time, because of the primitive methods to deal with typhus, all those who had typhus were quarantined, and they were quarantined until their death, because there was no real cure for it. But when he was quarantined, this Asher Nikolaev, he went to near this hospital, and from the, he couldn't go in because they were quarantined, but from the outside, he screamed out, "Laskil Chavina." Laskil Chavina is the 11th chapter of the letters of the Alter Rebbe in Tanya. And that chapter talks about how, even though we don't understand Hashem's ways, but whatever Hashem does is good, and even things which to us seem that they're not good, the truth is that they are absolute goodness. They're just they're not understood. L'rav tuvay, because there's such a great goodness that's beyond human understanding, that's why they appear to us as not being good. But the truth is, whatever Hashem does is good. And by having faith that whatever Hashem is doing to you is good, that's how you reveal the goodness in that event. Your pure faith in Hashem, that you know that whatever Hashem is doing is good, that reveals it and makes, and that reveals the inner goodness that is in that event itself. So he was acknowledging, Meir Shlaim was acknowledging that his health was restored because of this Asher Nikolaev, how he read Laskil Chavina every single day, and that hearing this every single day reinforced his faith in Hashem, and that gave him back his health. Bottom line is, as we're entering the week, Jewish custom is, tonight, some have a custom to sing the song, "Do not be afraid, my servant Yaakov." And entering the week, the challenges of the week, challenges of the Jewish people at this time, big stuff. But Hashem tells us, don't be afraid, and go with pure faith in Hashem. Hashem will give us success, and all of our people success, that the true victory of the IDF, and the true victory of the Jewish people, the coming of Mashiach, B'karav Mamash. Agud Davach, Afrei L'Chavach.